This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. A new play on stage in North Carolina gives us an intimate look at a family that struggles after the patriarch begins showing signs of Alzheimer's. The father has worked hard to provide for his kids, but his illness begins to fracture the family. The play is called The Miraculous and the Mundane. It's on stage at Man Bites Dog Theater in Durham starting next Thursday. And joining me now is Howard Kraft. He wrote the play. Welcome back, Howard.
Oh, good to be here, Frank.
Good to have you. A couple of actors as well, Lakeisha Coffey and Ron Lee McGill. They're both actors in the play. Lakeisha, nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And Ron, good to have you as well.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Howard, tell us about this. Where did this play come from?
The play was inspired by several things. The Alzheimer's element of it was sadly inspired by a family situation we were going through with my wife's father. And the character of Percy draws a little bit from my father-in-law in terms of just the indomitable spirit. But it's also a mixture of those older African-American men I grew up learning manhood from. Those old Vietnam vets who would cuss you out for walking on the grass and then give your mom a couple of $100 to send you while you're in school. So I wanted to pay homage to that and explore, you know, the impact of losing someone right before your eyes slowly, but also the elements of family and the things that make us strong when we're going through difficult situations.
And there are a lot of dynamics then that run through that. If you talk about role models or people who you looked up to, the idea of living up to their expectation has a lot to do with them staying healthy so that they can watch you grow. And if you lose some of that along the way, that has a real impact on your own memory of what happened and, of course, your progress going forward. So tell us more about the Nelson family and their dynamics.
The Nelson family is, you know, kind of inspired by the families that I grew up around. A lot of African-American drama deals with the search for the American dream or the struggle to achieve the American dream. But in this play, the American dream has already been achieved. Percy is a very successful businessman. He sent both of his children to college. But the impact of striving for that American dream is kind of what we explore here. And what I saw growing up, you know, most people in my neighborhood, you know, unlike the vision Trump has of African-American communities, you know, we went to college and, you know, our parents had things and things were passed down and we stable communities. But you saw the impact, as I'm sure you see in any hardworking community, of what the pursuit of that dream cost in terms of relationship, in terms of health and mental stability.
And again, what happens when you're trying to hold all that together? There's enough tension just trying to build all that. And then as those relationships break down through no fault of your own or through no effort of your own, through illness, that's an additional dynamic that throws things into disarray.
Right.
Lakeisha, tell me a little bit about your role. You play Percy's daughter, Chloe. Tell us more about her.
I do. I play the oldest child, from what I gather, the eldest sibling. And she's more of the caregiver when it comes time to be the caregiver, but has a little bit more of an open eye of what could be going on early on to try to help open the eyes to both her father and her brother of something not being right. She is also very similar to someone in my family because my aunt was actually the caregiver for my father, my grandfather, sorry, who had Alzheimer's, and my father was Junior. Sadly enough.
Yeah, well, and so I guess that's another element of this play. It's something that we can all relate to, Howard, and in terms of the dynamics of this family, right?
Definitely. I mean, even in my own family, as you know, we had illnesses, not just on my wife's side, but on my side of the family, and the way that responsibility broke down, you know, would always, you know, mostly fall on my sister in our immediate unit because she was the oldest. And then as a younger brother, getting older and being able to, you know, take some of that responsibility, but your older sibling, like, you know, their roles,
right.
You know. And so, you know, I drew a little bit from that experience, but, you know, my family has never been as dysfunctional in the ways that the Nelsons are dysfunctional. But there's definitely anybody who has an older sibling, an older sister, an older brother, they know what that tension can be, you know, related to that birth order thing.
Ron, you play Percy Jr. in the play, who's somebody who's made mistakes growing up. Tell us about your character and some of the tensions he's working with.
Okay, well, yes, for Junior, he's in his 30s. He has made a lot of mistakes growing up, and really he's playing catch up a lot of the time. I feel he's searching for validation always, especially with his family. And, you know, it's just an ever-growing struggle. So a lot of times he's in denial of his father's condition because he's so dead set on validating himself to his father, you know, while he can. So
yeah, because his father's grow by the day,
right?
Not in a place where he can even recognize change if it had taken place at all.
Absolutely.
I wonder if you two would do a scene for us now. Would you do that?
Sure.
Yes. What are you holding?
Daddy left a note.
What'd it say?
Read it for yourself.
I'll be back later on, Percy. That's it.
Let's go look for him.
Where?
I don't know, but we ain't gonna find him sitting here. Who knows what could be happening with him right now?
Ain't no need to be overreacting. Let's take it down a bit. Let's think.
What do we need to think about, Junior? What the hell do we need to think about? Daddy is out there by himself.
You can't go flying off the handle is all I'm saying. He knew what he was doing.
What happens later if he can't remember where he is or how to get home, huh? What happens then?
Just calm down.
Don't tell me to calm down.
You don't see me over here flipping out? Stay rational.
Because you're calm, cool, collected under pressure, right? Like when you feel like a child is insulting your little raggedy manhood, you do the calm, cool, and collected thing and smash their face into a tree.
Watch it, Chloe.
Or what?
Lakeisha Coffey and Ron Lee McGill performing a scene from the upcoming play The Miraculous and the Mundane. Play on stage at Man Bites Dog Theater in Durham next Thursday, March 23rd through Saturday, April 1st. Lakeisha Coffey, Ron Lee McGill, along with Howard Kraft here with me in the studio. Howard, tell us more about this notion of the American dream and the way this plays. And I mean, you mentioned something about African-American families, but this seems to me an American play and can play to American audiences everywhere.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Whatever background.
Yeah, definitely. It's you know, I feel that, and you and I have talked about this, I feel that African-American theater is as universal as any theater because it's the story of human beings dealing with a set of circumstances. And until human beings grow four arms and five, you know, they're universal truths and all that. So it definitely, I think culturally, though, and aesthetically, it's, you know, it's set in Durham. It's black Durham. But as far as the American dream, just this idea, you know, it's not new to the American story. Arthur Miller, Death of a Salesman, is, you know, similar themes of this idea of spending your whole life dedicated to this idea. And then when you have what that idea is and you look back over what it cost you, you know, physically, spiritually, mentally to get it, and then you say, is it worth it or not? And, you know, different people come out on different sides of that. And I guess that depends on how stable those other areas are after they get to that point.
With so many themes running through this, and with most of us, I don't think there's anybody in this audience that hasn't had some exposure to Alzheimer's disease. How do you work with something that is so familiar, right, in a dramatic way? In other words, we've all experienced this, and raise it to the level of a dramatic production and also sort of integrate these themes. Bring us into the creative process for you.
Well, I've had a lot of experience with this. I wrote several plays for North Carolina Central about health disparities, and those plays were very goal-oriented, the goal being to disseminate information and to get information from audience members and that kind of thing. And so I learned a lot about this process. So this is a totally different play, a totally different scope and goals involved. But what I learned is that, you know, the only way to write about a disease is you don't write about a disease, you know, and you write about character. Mm. You write about people, and a disease is what happens in the course of their lives, and that's where the drama comes in. But if you write about a disease, you're going to lose your audience in the first 10 minutes. So, but with this one, you know, Alzheimer's is just a part of a myriad of struggles that this family is facing. But yeah, that's how I approach it. From a creative aspect, is I deal with character first.
Well, Lakeisha, let's talk about your character, because you said that this reminded you something of your aunt, who was a caregiver herself. Again, how do you bring yourself to this as an actress with a model like that in mind? And then how do you, you know, sort of where do you take it next once you begin, if that's your starting point?
Well, I think the most important thing is to connect with who your character is, just in general for the story. But what I built upon was the interactions that I saw that my aunt had with my grandfather when I would visit, because they live in Alabama. So I would, you know, go down, and just my interactions with him as well. Luckily enough, he wasn't the typical Alzheimer's patient. So he was very mild-tempered. He just suffered a lot from not really knowing where he was and who he was. So it's a little different from some of the dynamics that I have to interact with my father in this production. And I think that's a good thing, because I get to experience what I've already experienced, but then get to see the other side as well.
Ron, tell us about you. How did you prepare for your character?
Oh, wow. With this one, I think it was more along the lines of soul searching. I usually am more comfortable with playing roles that are kind of just far left and out of this world. So in order to place someone who is so real, so just every man, you really got to delve deep. And so I think mentally and soulfully, I've really had to dig deep and just explore different aspects of just wants and desires and things of that nature.
I wonder if I can ask you to pick up that scene. You did part of that scene for us, and maybe you can pick it up and do the rest of that section for us, if you
would.
Absolutely.
Can you call your friends?
And tell them what? A grown man left his own house?
I truly am in this, all by myself.
Oh, of course you are, Chloe. It's always been about you. It's always about Chloe. What Chloe wants, what Chloe needs.
Ain't nothing ever been about what Chloe needs.
After Mom died, it was all about you.
You don't know what I went through when Mom died.
You seem to be all right to me, down in Atlanta chilling at Spelman.
I was in college.
You weren't here. You didn't have to live with him. How many liquor bottles you throw out? How many times you turn him over on his stomach at night so he went to throw up after a drunk and choke to death in his sleep? That's what I was doing while you were going to step shows. Then you come back from break or Christmas and it'd be like, joy to the world, Queen Chloe has come home.
You have no clue what it's like to have to be somebody else's perfect. Daddy's perfect. That's what I had to be when Mommy died. Daddy put me on a pedestal so high he couldn't even see my face. See how scared I was that I'd fall off any moment, feeling like if I did, he wouldn't love me anymore. I didn't get to make mistakes. Girls don't get to make mistakes and stay the same in their daddy's eyes.
But you got to be on the pedestal, Chloe. You got to be special.
Ron Lee McGill and Lakeisha Coffey performing a scene from the upcoming play, The Miraculous and the Mundane. The play on stage at Man Bites Dog Theater in Durham next Thursday, March 23rd through Saturday, April 1st. And my guests are Lakeisha Coffey and Ron Lee McGill, along with the playwright Howard Kraft. Of course, we have details at our website, stateofthings.org. Howard, this strikes me, too, and given the various platforms now and ways in which stories like this can be told, it also feels to me like the start of a Netflix series. I mean, it feel like how when you're writing again these days, this is a stage production, very old craft, a very old platform. Are you also thinking about other ways in which stories like this can be told in other platforms?
You know, actually, I haven't thought about this particular play in that way, but some other things I have. You know, I've been writing a couple of radio dramas, and the work that we've done here with Jade City. You know, you start seeing that, you know, the character stories can go on, and there could be, you know, another life.
I'm just wondering too how more contemporary media affects playwrights, people who work in this very old school craft, and one that I'm so happy is still around. But I wonder what the influence of all these other media are on writers.
Well, I can speak for myself. I think that one of the things you have to accept is that the American attention span is much shorter. You don't have you can't write an Arthur Miller or even an August Wilson type monologue today in a new play because, you know, our attention span is based on a 30-minute sitcom. And so for me, it's affected making my scenes shorter and sharper, which I think has helped and helps with the pacing. But I would say that would be the biggest difference is writing for this audience is different than writing for an audience in the '80s. I mean, if you look at the complexities of even the sitcoms, you know, you look at the complexity of a show like Archie Bunker, and you might have one or two shows that are that complex, but you know, not the writing's just not there. So, you know, the breath in which you have to get in and get out and keep audience is a lot different today for today's playwrights than it was. And so that's good in some ways, and in some ways you lose some of the poetry of the theater. So it's like a compromise. It's a fine edge. But if you listen to enough Wu-Tang Clan, the RZA has told you how to negotiate that edge in a proper manner.
And you do it every time. And I'm always happy to see it live and on stage with real breathing bodies spitting right there in front of me. So thank you for keeping up the good work, Howard Kraft. Lakeisha Coffey and Ron Lee McGill also here. Howard wrote the upcoming play, The Miraculous and the Mundane. Lakeisha and Ron, both actors in the play. Thank you all for being here.
Could I say just one thing real quickly? I want to say if people are interested in more information on the play, please check out manbitesdogtheater.org. And I also want to thank Street Signs and Joseph Meagle and Elizabeth Corley Meagle for helping to bring this show.
They did. That was part of the Process series, was it?
Yes, it was. We did a reading.
UNC, at the University of North Carolina, which does help bring a lot of these productions to life and onto the stage and the commercial stage. So you can also, if you missed that, you can go to our website, stateofthings.org, and we've got a link. So one way or another, you'll get there. The Miraculous and the Mundane on stage at Man Bites Dog Theater in Durham, Thursday, March 23rd through Saturday, April 1st. And we've got details at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Sheltnorman, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brooklyn. Robin Copley's our technical director, Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.